Hi, and welcome to the You Podcast, the show about small-ticket entertainment. My name is Asim Burney, and I'm joined by my regular co-hosts,
Martin Corley,
and
Ben.
Every show, we talk about news and technology that you might have missed, and we always have a weekly discussion of a non-mainstream or forgotten movie. We usually pick a different genre per week, and this week we'll be talking about a French movie called Un Prophète. Also this week, we have a very special guest joining us, Louis-François from the websites Kinomax.fr and CoupeDeVieux.fr. Hi, Aleph. How's it going?
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
This has been long in the making, this episode, so it better be a good one.
It will be a very good one.
Great.
Yeah, we'll try that out.
Okay, great. So our first segment, as usual, is a stat of the week. So let's get the show started. Marty, take it away. What's our stat of the week?
Thanks very much, guys. Well, this week we have a couple of numbers rather than just one. The first number is 0.99, which some mathematicians will actually argue isn't actually a number, because I guess it isn't. And the other number is $1.9 million. The first number refers to the amount that iTunes first started selling a single tune for when iTunes was launched by Apple back in the day. And the second number, which is the 1.9 million, that's actually the most that somebody has at least been taken to court for with legal proceedings for illegally downloading. So I just really wanted to highlight the extreme nature of downloading whatever it is you want to download from the internet. Part of this has been brought about because I also read today that Mininova has lost a court case in the Netherlands, which means that it's going to lose a lot of content.
So clearly, I mean, none of us download illegal software or programs or anything like that, but you can say with the fines that they have, they're not stimulating legal downloads, right?
I think it's very much a double-edged sword. My personal view on this is that if you threaten people who've downloaded, even if it's however many hours worth of music, that you don't actually know their motivations for downloading the music. They could download the music and think, wow, this music's actually fantastic, I will go out and buy it all. And at the same time, I think that any headlines that get generated over massive fines for downloading stuff inevitably lead to spikes in traffic for websites like Mininova and for the Pirate Bay. So I think there are a lot of issues at stake here, and I think on the one hand you can argue that, you know, 0.99 isn't very much. But that said, if you want to buy 12 songs to have an album, then that ends up being a lot of money. So I guess the ball is in everybody's court.
Aleph, you're a big fan of Spotify and all this, right? Legal downloads, yep. And I think you also buy a lot from iTunes, right?
I don't buy a lot from iTunes, but I did take a premium subscribing from Spotify lately.
And is it a good service? Is it, because I'm hearing a lot about it.
Yeah, I believe it's a good one now, because at first it was good service. Now it's a really good one because you have like the availability to download physically the MP3s on your desktop. Oh. And you can have them physically also on your iPhone or iPod. So I suppose it on my side it replaces totally the former iTunes MP3 I used to have.
Wow.
So and I'm using it like every day, and it's really cool. So I believe it's probably one of the thing that you can get without having the global license that major wants, but we finally have it with that.
Okay, but I know that you're a big Apple fan, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that...
That doesn't matter?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's well integrated with the iPhone and everything. So I suppose the fact that you could have it on the iPod was probably the killer apps for me.
Yeah.
But I believe that $9.99 is the almost on the edge of what I could or what I could not spend. So
yeah.
I guess I would have done it before if it was like 7 or 8, but 10 is a bit too much. But you can
the psychological price point really works on you. 10 is too much,
exactly.
9.99 is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
10 is too much.
10 is too much, clearly. Ahmed, man, what are we doing?
Start with 10, you go to 11, and then 12, and then 15, and there'll be no stopping.
It's a vicious cycle. Ahmed, man, what are we doing with PCs, man? Why haven't we switched already? Why don't we want to be Justin Long instead of the other guy with the glasses?
I don't know about you, but I'm switching away from PCs comes next year. I had enough.
Yeah? I'm the
I
last one?
Yeah, you're definitely the last one.
Okay, crap.
You're the last one, Asim, but your wife already has a Mac, so you're halfway there whether you like it or not.
Yeah, true. okay.
You actually don't really count.
I what?
You don't really count since Isa has an Apple.
Yeah.
An Apple in your house.
Yeah, but that's still Isa's Apple. She lets me look at it sometimes and I can touch it sometimes. And go like, ah, what a beautiful PC.
Porn would look so much nicer on your laptop than mine.
I don't know, man. I don't know if you can do something dirty in front of a Mac. I don't know. It's kind of like a holy machine. You don't want to, like, you know. Like, I don't get people, like, I don't get people that take their iPods and iPhones in the bathroom, you know. How could you do that to an Apple product?
Hey, it's like saving time, man.
I'm saying this because I know everybody with an Apple has done that, so I'm just making everybody feel uncomfortable.
But it changes it from doing something dirty from doing something good.
Something holy.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
More pleasant experience.
Cool. Okay, I think we can move over to the underwhelming Trinity. Ahmed, as usual, go first.
Let me kick it off. All right, guys. Usually I talk about anything of new technology that's coming our way, but this week I came across a new technology that is really good, but highly, highly useless. Pretty much what it is, oh no, it's absolutely, absolutely useless. It's for everyone who wakes up in the middle of the night and wants to know what time it is, and they are tired or sick of alarm clocks shining into their eyes or...
Man, that's me. I hate that.
Yeah.
That's me. This product is for me.
And or you switch on your phone and all this light comes into your eye. So now they have this new sheet that you replace your old sheet with. And at the corner where the pillow is, it sticks out and it tells you the time. So in a way like Braille, you have to feel it. It's not only that you need to start training your brain at like 3 in the morning when you just woke up to start feeling numbers, but supposedly this is better than looking at the time. Yeah, that's a big no-go for me, so that's my part of the useless new technology, but you guys tell me what you think about it.
I mean, I hate the alarm clock shining in my eyes. I really, really do, but... Still, I mean, it seems like one of those products that if they would present it at the on the Dragon's Den, Duncan Bannatyne would say something like, "You've solved a problem that doesn't exist."
Exactly.
That's because in this instance, Duncan Bannatyne would be correct. There is no need for such an invention, and I just don't understand people whose alarm clocks shine too brightly into their eyes. Move the alarm clock. What are you doing? Are you sleeping next to your alarm clock in bed with it? This is just
the weirdest thing. I'm really near it and I have to like turn it. But, I don't want to be waking up.
Dude, I think LF, I think you should wear your Ray-Bans so it shines less in your eyes.
Exactly.
And you look cool while sleeping. Yeah, that sounds very interesting and pointless. So that's the clock.
Highly pointless, not pointless.
So that's the clock sheet, and we're gonna upload some visuals on the website with the posting, right?
And please, everyone, I would appreciate if everyone goes with us and go like, this is useless, guys. The owner of this invention needs to know that.
Yeah. If only he'd gone to the dragon's den first. We need some sort of...
Then we could have seen his humiliation on national TV.
Yes. I want to see that event televised.
LF, do you guys have a version of Dragon's Den in France, where it's a show where inventors come in front of four investors and then they pretty much break them psychologically in front of the whole nation?
We don't have that yet, but I think it's a pretty good thing.
It's a pretty like
it can be funny. It depends on who destroy them psychologically.
Well, you get Bernard Tapie in there, for example.
Yeah.
You need a nice lady in there. Sarkozy's son, one of his sons. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. We gotta get in touch with TFN and pitch this idea if it's not there.
Yeah, I think it might be. It'd be cool. We have like they show things and it's very good, but it's like very light psychologically. It's like, oh yeah, very good, very good, but you are better. But I think it's if we can do something like more crushing, it might be.
But see, now I'm thinking, if the Dragon's Den would happen in France, they would probably invite that inventor and sit him at the table with the investors, and they would get some coffee and have a whole discussion about why his product would work and not work, and the psychological, philosophical implications of giving a product to the world like that.
I believe that the last thing like that I saw on TV was a barbecue which was vertical.
A vertical barbecue.
Yeah, exactly. It was a French guy who invented it, and he was very happy and made a lot of money because he could have a vertical barbecue. I don't know why.
It's hilarious.
Him and the guy who did the sheets get together.
Combine, merge the two ideas, right?
Barbecue.
We need to merge it. Yeah, Marty, I am doing the hand sign of merging while saying merging.
Yes.
Okay, so we can move on. Marty, maybe you can go now.
Yeah, the little thing that I've picked out for the Trinity this week is a book, in fact. It's not actually a particularly recent book. It's not a very old book either, but it's first published in 2001. And this is a book by an author called Glenn David Gold. And it was his first book, effectively his only book, in fact, and it's called Carter Beats the Devil. And it's something that I picked up recently, and I just thought that it's such a brilliant book that it would be worth having a little introduction to. Basically, the book describes the life and times of an actual musician, of an actual illusionist from the early part of the 20th century, a guy called Charles Joseph Carter, and he was basically contemporaries of Harry Houdini and other sort of illusionists of the time. But the story doesn't so much focus on that, but it more implicates him in the mysterious death of President Harding, who dies shortly after taking part in one of Carter's shows. And then the book sort of flips around. It gives you background to his early life when he was a child, when he first got inspired to be a magician and an illusionist. And then from there, it just sort of talks about him, the FBI, why people are sort of keen to hunt him down, not actually because he was responsible for the president's death, but for a secret that was revealed to him by the president shortly before his death. And that's really, that's in a very nut of a nutshell. That's the book. It's just excellently put together, brilliant idea, very well written. And in fact would make a really good film.
It would.
It really would.
Sounds like something amazing for a film, actually.
I think one of the problems with the filming might be that we've already had Prestige and we've already had The Illusionist. And I think these two movies are probably very much inspired by the books. I read it a couple of years ago, I think when I was back in college. I loved it. Even just the title of it, the title, which is, I think the title is about the final trick he pulls, right, Marty?
It is, yeah. It's an illusion that he pulls at the end of at the end of his act, and he
beats the devil. Somebody dressed as the devil.
But he literally beats somebody dressed as the devil. That's correct.
But what my main thing from the book that I took was it also talks just about the time that TV was being invented, being launched as a technology, and how that mirrored the decline of the theater industry and magic as a whole. 'Cause in a sense, you could say magic stopped when TV started existing, because there was a new technology that was magical. So that's one thing I found really interesting in the book too.
On my side, I've never heard of it.
No?
Me neither. I'm quite ignorant when it comes to that, I guess.
Well, highly recommend it, and I think Marty does the same, and you should definitely check out for a copy.
Okay. I'll check if it's translated in French too.
Right. Yeah. It probably is. I think it was I even noticed it was Barney Stinson's poster in his apartment. Carter be the devil. If that isn't a ringing endorsement, hey, then I don't know. That's a reference to How I Met Your Mother, by the way. That wasn't clear. Sorry?
Is in the bro code?
I think it's in the playlist, not in the bro code. Okay. I think I think maybe we can go to LF now. How about that? If you're okay with that. Maybe you can talk a bit about your websites, Coup de Vieux and Kinomax. Maybe I can spell it out because it's a French word and there's a lot of letters in there that you don't hear. So it's www.coupdevieux.fr. That was correct, right?
Yep. It's meant like it's what you said when it's what you say when you just check that something is like. You think it was a bit old, but it's like 15 years ago. So you just feel like you're very old, all in a sudden.
Yeah, it's sudden realization of your age.
Exactly. So I'm doing this website with three other colleagues, with two or three other colleagues, and it mainly check out like. Some, as it say, French culture of what we used to see in the 80s and 90s. So if you happen to check the website, you might see that we've decided to go for the Saved by the Bell image, you know, with blue, green, and very flashy. And
I didn't know that was Saved by the Bell. That's actually nice touch. That's really cool.
And so we have like a daily update with one old thing like a video game, a movie, or I don't know, advertising or a TV show or something like that that used to touch all the generation and that. Yeah, so either it's like I didn't remember that at all, and that was like 20 years ago, or it's it seemed like 3 years ago, and it's like 12. So it works. There's quite a lot of good things. Like we already we talked this week of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
That was let me check. It was aired in France in 1992, meaning like 17 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm one of the regular readers of your website, so it happens a lot that I'm just shocked or I'm just screaming out in joy about, oh my god, that show, I used to love that show. Even the movies, sometimes you play, like Hero Quest is on here. So much. Oh, Street Hawk. When you posted that clip of Street Hawk, I just shouted in the air.
Like, for example, Street Hawk, only 13 episodes?
Yeah, I didn't even realize that, man. That was a big part of my life was driving my bicycle with a helmet on and doing the theme from Street Hawk, which I'll probably upload now.
And now you just say that the guy has like 55 years old.
Oh my god! Oh my god! So what was your idea behind creating the website?
The idea was just to have fun because we are nostalgic of that.
Yeah.
And we just had fun remembering all these old advertisements and all these TV shows that we liked, and we wanted to also have fun by finding some good anecdotes and little thingies. So like I don't know if you've seen like an old anime in France which is called Ulysse 31.
Yeah.
Ulysse 31.
Ulysse 31. And, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it was about.
I have it on DVD box set actually.
Okay. Because it's like very strong in France, and for example, the shuttle of Ulysse is like something a bit mythical and everything. But I learned by searching that it was made from the logo of the channel from that time.
Wow! Really?
Yeah. So something like that, like this, or I don't know. It happens a lot.
I'll have to revisit that. I'll have to have a little.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at that.
Or for example, that Cobra,
mm-hmm.
which is an anime, was made from a French actor, which is called Jean-Paul Belmondo.
Wow, it's
and
so
the
based
main character.
Oh, it's based. Oh, that makes complete sense now that you tell me. Wow,
there's a lot of little thing like that, so that we put in.
Well, so actually, seeing it with adult eyes again kind of brings a lot more to it than you did before as a kid.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And is most of your content, is it user generated? Do people send in pics, or do you kind of go out there and find yourself?
Well, we have like on the top of the top links that you can propose one. So we are picking some from that. And we also have like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put that. Oh no, put that on. Oh no, I have a better idea. So we can also work that way.
Okay, great. So that's coup de vieux. Oh, there's actually hyphens between coup and de and vieux. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but it works. It works also without.
Ah, that's so great. That's good for people that want to check it out.
Check out Google Maps. Okay.
Okay, and you can also be followed on Twitter, right?
Yep. And without. I think it's without. I didn't check that, but I can't. I can now. Yeah, it's without. It's definitely without. Coup de vieux.
One word.
Yep.
Okay.
One word.
Great. Cool. Right. And a word about Kinomax. Is that still?
Yep. Kinomax is an old project that I used to develop. Now it's more one of my fun, which is doing most of the updates, but I'm still watching on it. That's my little baby. It's a French website about international movies, so we are mostly doing updates about trailers and incoming movies and other news about main international facts.
Yeah. It's also a website I regularly follow, actually. I used to post a little bit, but that's been less and less. I've been posting more on your blog, actually, right?
Yeah. But you had to do a bit about Bollywood, but I suppose that there's not so much Bollywood movies every year. Right?
Exactly, there's a drought this year. No, I think it was a great idea then, but then this project kind of started, so it kind of took over. You gotta have priorities. But both of your Kinomax and Coup de Vue are in French, but your blog is in English, right? Also.
It's both in French and English. So you can. I have a Tumblr, so loops.tumblr.com, like it's spelled. So
okay, perfect.
There's a lot of stuff that I like. It's more just like a scrapbook, or just like what happens to be in my hands at that moment. Like snapshots.
Nice snapshots also. I really like your photography, especially the work you did in Japan. That was really pretty.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I also liked your, what was that, that series you did in different restaurants in the world? Was that?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool, too.
Let's continue that, I think, yeah. It was interesting.
Okay, so check out his blog, check out his websites. They're amazing. We're going to upload them all on the show notes, too. So
thank you.
Okay, my turn for the underwhelming trinity. Well, it's not a trinity. What's the smart word for four things instead of trinity? There's none?
It's like fornity.
Fornity.
I like fornity. Fornity's good.
Yeah, so it's the underwhelming fornity this time. As you can see, my co-hosts have always something interesting to say and something cutting edge, while me, I just go troll the internet and find the most useless, crappy list that I can find and talk about that. So today I'm talking about 99 most jaw-dropping moments in movie history, which is a list created on Total Films website. I'm going to upload it here for 1 second, the Skype window, so you can have it too. And we're going to upload it, obviously, in the show notes.
You might just precise that it's a bit of a spoiler for people who didn't see the movies.
Yes, it is. This is very spoiler-heavy, but it's also, I guess, the most of the endings of the movie, so yeah. Yeah, it is a spoiler. But we won't spoil it. We'll talk about the list and we'll talk about the choices, and then maybe we have our own suggestions that we can add other movie moments that we thought were jaw-dropping, for example. Yeah? So on number 5, they have 1989's revolutionary film Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee. On number 4, History of Violence by David Cronenberg with Viggo Mortensen. Number 3, Children of Men by Alfonso Cuarón. Number 2, Alien, and specifically the alien birth scene. And then on number 1, Empire Strikes Back, the pretty much Luke, I'm your father scene.
Oh my god, that's spoiler.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree when the line has become a t-shirt. It's not a spoiler anymore. So, yeah, Ahmed, what did you think of these were the top 5 out of 100 jaw-dropping moments in movie history. Do you agree, Ahmed? Is there things that you said, come on, man, not this, or how could you forget that one?
Can I come? Can I begin?
Yeah, you can go, LF.
Okay. I must say that it was not the one who I would have think like in top of mind.
Yeah.
Except maybe the I'm your father thing.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back. You gotta give it that. I mean, that is probably the most jaw-dropping moment.
Just by checking a bit. I believe that the number 6, which was a usual suspect with the Kevin Spacey walk at the end.
Yeah.
This definitely deserved to have in the top 5.
Right. Yeah, that was a great moment in cinema.
I wouldn't have a lot of this one. Maybe I'm just checking some out. But I haven't seen the Children of Men, so I can't definitely talk about that.
You should definitely check it out. I wouldn't say it's a jaw-dropping moment, though. I feel it's like it's a moment. The ending of the movie, it's like a punch that hits you in the stomach, and you don't know what to do with it more than jaw-dropping. What do you think, Marty?
I mean, I agree, actually. I think there are other things in film history which are more jaw-dropping. I actually don't think that Luke, I'm Your Father, is actually particularly jaw-dropping.
Really?
For example. No.
Come on, man.
You forget that?
Well, maybe that's just because I have, like, film fatigue, and I just know the film. Well, I mean, I'm 31. I must have seen the film about 31 times.
But it's all about the first time you see it, no? I mean, Usual Suspects, same. If you know he's going to walk out straight, it's not jaw-dropping anymore, no?
Well, I just... Honestly, Star Wars, it's just... It is what it is. I was going to put the Usual Suspects in there. I mean, I haven't seen that Clive Owen film. I haven't seen the Spike Lee film. There's really only Star Wars, and that's it. I don't think I've seen any other films. I haven't seen History of Violence. I haven't seen Alien.
I don't see Fight Club in the even top 10. And what the fuck?
Yeah, Fight Club needs to be in top 10 of every list. Anyway, any list, Fight Club has
even
to be.
Even slapstick.
Clearly. Ahmed, what did you think?
No, I was just saying that with that list, I really, really agree only with two films on it, which is obviously Luke, I Am Your Father, and The Usual Suspects, which is actually not on the top 5 even.
Yeah, Usual Suspects. I also thought of, for example, Memento.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of films that they have moments like that, but I'm really surprised they didn't put them nowhere in the near top 5. Mm.
Or was Memento more of a head-scratching moment than a jaw-dropping moment?
I don't know, but I can guarantee you in every 3 Tarantino movies, you would come up with a good jaw-dropping moment.
Okay, cool.
No?
Yeah, definitely.
Apparently not.
Yeah, jaw-dropping, maybe I see it differently. Jaw-dropping is, it's more like, I know what you're saying, yeah, no, I have to take my words back. Tarantino has quite a lot of jaw-dropping moments.
But these movies that they chose, I'm not going to agree except for Luke, I'm Your Father in the top 5.
I don't see either like Tarantino's movie in it. Like I don't know the Marvin like when they are speaking in the car and the gun from
When he shoots Marvin in the head.
Yeah, exactly. From Vegas.
That was a what the fuck moment.
Yeah, exactly. For example, or like the famous razor blade Mr. Blonde thing.
Yeah.
Like it was like you were like you can't
Or the Hans Landa pipe. When Hans Landa pulls out his pipe when he's speaking with Monsieur Lapetit, that's a what the fuck moment. Okay, cool.
And what do you think about the do the right thing choice?
I think it. I mean, when the riot started and do the right thing, that was that. I mean, you could feel something very emotionally, you know, that there was this boiling point reaching in that movie that riot was the ultimate solution to it. But Yeah, I mean, Do the Right Thing, I love the movie, but it would not feature in my top five at all. Not even close. But yeah, it's a seminal movie. It's amazing. And Spike Lee, I really feel he does not get the respect he deserves. But maybe the, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand it why. But.
Okay,
great.
Let's get to the film.
Yeah.
Vous avez quelqu'un dehors ?
Non, chef.
Et si à l'intérieur vous connaissez du monde, amis, ennemis ?
Personne, chef.
Cosa faccio qui, nella baggio ? J'ai eu des problèmes dans la cour, tu crois que tu vas tenir longtemps sans protection ? Il y a un mec qui t'a parlé, tu le connais ?
Pourquoi ?
Si tu le tues pas, c'est moi qui le tue.
Les barbus, tu parles avec les Corses, tu fais le grand
écart.
Tu nous proposes un arrangement, les planques, les bagnoles, les fournisseurs, tout. On prend le marché et là on pèse.
C'est à cause de moi. Si tu rêves, si tu penses, si tu vis, c'est à cause de moi.
Comment tu fais ça ? Subhanallah, t'es un prophète ou quoi ?
Elle était très regardée très vite, mais pas ça, c'est ma possession.
We're talking about A Prophète, which is a 2009 French crime drama directed by Jacques Audiard. And it pretty much talks about, we follow a main character called Malik, who's in prison for 6 years. We follow his life from his arrival to the point where he's, from the point where he's alone and they never even explain what his crime is exactly, to 6 years later, where he, I mean, grows up and becomes a man, you could say, and the power structure changes a lot, and he pretty much grows up in prison. It's a social commentary by Jacques Audiard about the French penal system. Why are we watching this movie? A couple of months ago, I was having dinner with a few friends of mine, and it was just after summer. I'd seen a lot of good movies, and I was basically discussing that I'd seen which were my favorite movies of the year at that point, which was 500 Days of Summer, Brothers Bloom, Funny People, and Inglourious Basterds. You can agree or disagree with that list. That was my choice at the time. So my French colleague, friend who was sitting in front of me, he said, so you have not seen A Prophète yet? And I had heard about it. I had heard they won the Grand Prix in Cannes, I think.
Yep.
Is that what they won?
Exactly. Yeah.
I had heard about it, but I hadn't actively sought it out because, honestly speaking, prison movies just kind of scare me. And I was worried about calling it A Prophète, that there would be very strong religious undertones mixed to it, which I didn't... Both those two things together didn't really appeal to me. But my friend claimed that you can't make a top five list of 2009 movies if you have not seen this movie. So that was, for me, a very compelling reason to watch it and make you guys watch it.
All right.
So
if I can quickly jump in.
Yeah.
I think you'll find that you can make a top five film list for 2009 without having seen it. You can also You can also see the film and then just not put it in your top five.
That's.
I was going to suggest we invite that friend on one of our episodes and have a serious discussion with him.
That's why we brought in LF. We need somebody to back. But let me get into it. Let me get into how my feelings were, because I really like the movie. Maybe we can start in just go one by one. Maybe our guest. We need to be hospitable and give you the first word. What did you feel? What did you think about Un Prophète, LF?
Well, the first to say that Jacques Audiard is a French director that had a very very publicly acclaimed movie which is called De battre mon cœur s'est arrêté. I believe the international title is The Beats That My Heart Skipped.
Yes, which is a remake of Fingers by Harvey Keitel.
Exactly, exactly. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it was one of, if not the, I think it was the most, my favorite movie of that year.
Let me just intercut here, because actually Jacques Audiard and me have a history together. I had the same discussion that I have about Prophète, about his movie De battre mon cœur s'est arrêté, De beat my heart skipped, and I had exactly the same conversation with another French friend about his other movie with Vincent Cassel called Read My Lips or Sous mes lèvres, right?
Yep, I didn't see it actually.
So
but
it's funny, I've had this discussion and I really believe the French as a nation love Jacques Audiard.
Yeah, I think so. I think it, for me, for example, I think it's like one of the directors that I wait the most for the next movie.
Wow.
So it's like he has the caution from the and the other endorsement from for the author side, and also he has like
technical ability.
In the previous movies like Romain Duris and Vincent Cassel, which are probably the most bankable French actors in right now. So the Un Prophète, which was without any big stars in the casting, and but it was really awaited, even especially after Cannes and the fact that he had the Grand Prix. So what I can tell is that I really love the movie, and that I can understand a bit why you couldn't find something, because I think it's quite French as a movie. And but I think it's very right and fair, all the actors are really good, and I don't think you can argue with that.
No, I don't think you can fault that.
The acting job was very good.
So, and it's a lot of what the character, which is when he is arriving, like a white page, is filling in with the prison living, and how come you. You can live with that afterwards without taking a lot of idea. It just looks at it and give it back to you. So in France, it was also seen as a prison, prison front point of view. And, what you could live in prison, and how you had to, you couldn't just live on your own. You had to deal and to be with the right people and to just make your living if you wanted to survive. So that's what interested me, and the fact that even though it was in prison, and that. It was in a very reducted place. You had to, there was a lot of things going on and thinking in it and everything.
Mm. Yeah. Marty, what did you feel?
I felt that the film is not bad. I just wouldn't understand seemingly a lot of the fuss behind it. I felt that it was not very clear at all to me why the film was called Un Prophète. I mean, basically, as far as I could make out, he has one flash and vision about some deer, and that's kind of it. It seemed to talk about Islam in prison, but not really go anywhere with it. And maybe I was thinking that because it was called Un Prophète, and it did feature a Muslim in the lead role, that there would just be more meaning behind that. And perhaps I just felt like there should have been more and there wasn't, and that maybe disappointed me. So I didn't really understand why it was called that. And I felt that his journey through prison was basically very, very easy. He didn't really get involved in being raped. He only got beaten up once. What kind of prison is that?
I don't want to spoil anything, but he has to do something to be.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
He does, and that actually that thing. Well, one bit of it never happens, and then the other bit does happen. But then, I don't know. I just felt like I was comparing other prison-related films to it quite a lot.
Like,
do you mean that English prison have a more rape?
English-speaking prisoners are more prone to rape.
I mean, it's unfair to make the comparison, but the Shawshank Redemption, for example, that says far more to me about what it was like to be in prison in the 1920s in America than this does about being in prison in France now. I don't necessarily see that it's a particularly brilliant commentary on the French penal system, and I don't really see that there was. It just seemed a little bit long. It just didn't really seem to focus, for me anyway, on anything in particular. I mean, I loved the guy playing the lead. I mean, the guy playing Malik, what's his name? Tahar something. I mean, that was really good. But I just felt that his character was a little bit sucky, and I just felt that his passage through the film was just quite straightforward and elementary. I felt that things just always fell into his lap, and he never really had to sort of work for anything that came his way. He seemed to have a pretty easy ride through prison once he'd ingratiated himself with the Sicilians.
Mm.
And then at the end...
Corsicans.
Did I say Sicilians?
Yeah.
with the Corsicans. But, yeah, I just think... normal film.
Okay, let me just react to the Un Prophète comment about the title. Actually, I read an interview with Jacques Audiard, and he said that the problem a lot of people have made that confusion and thought that there were going to be a lot of religious elements, but it actually comes from a mistranslation of the word Un Prophète, where in French, Un Prophète can also mean somebody that's kind of a visionary, somebody that sees things, and it doesn't necessarily need to have a prophet as in English, which is more of a religious context. So I think that maybe to a certain extent that that confusion existed less in France than it did, or those expectations weren't built.
I agree with the thing that the religious matter was a bit more like you could expect more religious matters in the movie. Also in French.
The one thing that I didn't find, that then I found contradicting to Jacques Audiard's statements himself, was then the poster, which has a very much very religious iconography to it. But I can understand where Martin is coming from too. I don't feel he had an easy ride though in jail, but maybe I can go to Ahmed first. Ahmed, what were your feelings about the movie in general?
Pretty much, I've been watching like 3-4 French films in a row, which were like completely kick-ass. I went into this film expecting a title like Un Prophet, so I was like probably a little bit expecting, you know, something on the religious side. But to me, that wasn't it at all. To me, it just struck me like he's a guy with a highly destructive personality.
Mm.
Like, his life in prison was a complete mess. His life outside of prison was a complete mess, and still will be a complete mess with a character like that.
But I don't know how else could he have reacted in that situation, I asked myself.
I can't really get into this without giving a lot of stuff away, but he could have easily avoided all of this by, like, let's say, as cheesy a dream as it is, but stick with his own kind, instead of going against this by, I want to be different, I want to do this, I'm going to go with people, I'm going to outsmart them, I'm going to do all of that. No,
he doesn't have that. He doesn't have that in the like the exterior life. That's why he went to prison, I think.
Yeah, he didn't have that connection with his own kind in the prison. I think a lot of the movie.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah,
I think a lot of the movie is about kind of Malik finding his own identity.
But that's what I'm saying. He has a very destructive personality at the time. I don't think any of this was as planned as a spur of the moment decision. He sees an opportunity, jumps on. No?
I think he had to have a lot of patience for the plan he pulled. And he did maybe calm down a bit more. And I think he needed to, in a sense, to survive.
I kind of agree. The thing that still does frustrate me, though, is that even if you accept that there's a slight difference in translation or whatever, somebody who's a prophet still makes prophecies or they're able to sort of divine the future. He very rarely did that in the film. There was nothing prophetic about his existence. And that, I think,
I agree about the title. It's an issue, but, well.
I think
but if we take, but if we do remove that, then I think the little stories within the film are quite interesting. Just the way he does hook up with one drug dealer, and just the little stories, and the guy who sort of comes to him in dreams, shall we say, without wanting to divulge the plot too much, and then obviously the other guy who's sort of takes him under his wing, but who's actually released from prison. I think those two things, I think, are the most interesting. But yeah.
To me, it looked like Oz in France.
Yeah.
It's a bit like what could be Oz in France now, and it tells quite a lot. But I think there's also something that we didn't mention, but about that is quite discussed right now in France and making a lot of fuss, and about the immigrated people or people coming from an immigration from like two generation or one generation, and that don't find that don't see them as their future and how they are integrated in France and how come they can't find their own image between France and Algeria or Morocco and everything, and the fact that he's taking side by with the Corsicans, for example, is quite also a choice that is not the thing that you could have made if you were on his side.
But that's also the kind of the choice that he makes that keeps him safe. I think he is searching for his identity. And I think also one thing that puts him off going to his own people is that the first two people that he meets that are from his own kind, the first guy steals his sneakers and beats him up.
Yeah.
And the second guy pretty much offers him drugs for head. So I think that also... I mean, he didn't choose to be with the Corsicans, but that was certainly what he kind of got forced into doing. And I really enjoyed the movie. It's not going to be in my top five, but I thought it was really well shot. It was really well acted. It was a vortex of violence. I mean, he got sucked into it. He was trying to find his identity. I remember a scene where he was in jail making jeans. And just the contradiction of him making jeans, which is basically a leisure outfit, and then just going out and trying to get out of that commitment he had made to the Corsicans, where he had to... Have you guys ever seen Snapdragon with Pamela Anderson?
No.
Nope.
Anyway, she kills people... In that movie, Pamela Anderson plays like a twin, and one is a psychotic killer, and she kills people the same way Malik has to kill Rehab in this movie.
Okay.
Which I thought was just a funny coincidence.
Is it an auteur film or not?
It's a what?
Is it an auteur film?
It's clearly an auteur movie. It's also about a vortex of emotions, but of a different kind. Following him in 6 years, it was very self-contained, the movie. You didn't know what happened to Malik before jail, and you certainly don't see what's going to happen to him afterwards, but you do see a very clear progression in the character. You see where he was and what he's become and what he has had to do to become. Maybe he didn't get beat up that much, but he had to kind of get a lot of humiliation from a lot of people, especially from César, which for me then also kind of satisfies the ending of the movie, where you see César only being an old man alone in the yard, sitting alone on his bench, which his bench isn't even his bench anymore. And that happens in those 2.5 hours in this movie. And that's why I really enjoyed this movie. But the first one Jacques Audiard made, that kind of connected with me. So I'm happy. I can take him off the hit list. So for you guys, were there any scenes that stood out? Any scenes that you connected with, for example? LF?
I really like the one that he had that discussions with the other guy that
Rehab.
You know, yeah, and he was like speaking to himself and like having a dark angel speaking to.
Yeah,
I really like that, and it I think it was like a special atmosphere and like a great soundtrack and everything. So these moments were like very particular in the movie and very well made.
I love the Nas track in it that they put in. When he was suddenly moving up in the jail, getting a bit of money, getting his hustle on, and they blasted this track from Nas in there. Loved it. But just a question on to follow up on that. What do you think what was Rehab for him? What do you think he stood for? For me, it was very... I was thinking about a lot of things. I was wondering first, is it kind of his Arab identity that he's looking for? Then I thought, maybe no, it can be, because he's not really connecting with that. Then I thought, it's maybe his guilt, but that wasn't it. Maybe it's his friend, his solitude. But I just couldn't figure it out. So I was wondering what you guys thought about it.
I think it's just his mind searching in every way possible. And that he couldn't find himself outside, he can't find himself inside, and he just is just not really well with himself also. So it's like, what can I do if I'm not good anywhere?
Yeah.
And it was like a way to export it and talk to someone, because he couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And having someone caring about him, even though it was this person.
Yeah. I mean, the scenes where they were struggling with each other, those were kind of almost intimate scenes. You couldn't see what was going on. I had to have a double take about, are they fighting or what are they doing? But
Yeah.
The ending of it was very clear what they were doing, and it wasn't making love. Marty, any scenes that you like, maybe, or what do you think Rehab stood for? Any of those two?
I actually felt that Rehab did stand for his connection, or certainly his early connection and his thoughts about Islam and about being an Arab. Just because in that little passage of the film there, the guy's talking to him about can he read, can he write, can he do this, that, and the other. Talks to him about leaving books, things like that. And then shortly after that, he does take an interest in learning and sort of improving himself as a person. So I think there is some of that in that. I don't necessarily think that there's a lot more to it than that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a bit like you. I was looking for what other role he could or should have played in this guy's life and couldn't find anything. So maybe there is just a very simple explanation and that's it.
Because suddenly he also just disappears. There's a moment where he's actually calling him out, calling for his name. I think he needs him at that moment and he doesn't show up. And he suddenly disappears. So, yeah. Ahmed, what did you think?
I chose to actually think of it in a completely different way. I thought of it like in a psychological point of view that the guy is confused and he has no sense of identity whatsoever, that his subconscious took the guy who he took his life as a guide for him. Like, this is the way his subconscious was trying to communicate with him, try to make him find a certain path, but it still wasn't working out with him. And it's really interesting when you said he disappeared at a certain point. I really thought that's just simply his subconscious giving up because, you know, it's either he found out exactly where he needs to be going or the subconscious just completely gave up on him.
I think there was an element of solitude, the way, and that was a through line in the movie about Rehab, about Malik being in jail, the way it was shot, the way there were scenes where there was like a keyhole scene shot through a keyhole, you could only see a part of the screen. It was very claustrophobic. Also the ending of what happens to Cesar at the end, I think it all speaks a lot about solitude. So I think that maybe was the idea I went with at the end of it. Any scenes that
scenes I liked? Scenes I liked, there was actually quite a few scenes. I really thought, like you said, I completely agree that the whole film was like really, really well shot, from the scene when he was killing Riyadh to the scene when he was deaf and he had no idea what was going on. He was just like on autopilot.
Yeah.
Just a lot of things. I even liked the last scene when, before they got Caesar to go down on his knees, he was at the peak of that time being in prison, yet he was so nervous and scared of Caesar coming his way. He was standing there with a cigarette, completely trembling, and he sent the other guys to deal with him.
I think maybe there was kind of a father-son kind of relationship between them. Also, again, a search for his identity, I think. His dad died on a very early age, and I think he kind of had that relationship with Cesar, but Cesar clearly did not feel the same about him.
No, I mean, like, all in general for the film, I usually hate prison movies, but this is the first prison film I actually like, because it was just completely different. It's not like anything I've seen before. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Were there things that you liked less, for example, LF, things that you feel didn't connect with you?
No, I can't say that, because I really enjoyed the movie, so I don't remember. It's been quite a month now, so I don't have the whole movie in my head. I believe that on the downside, that it was like some of the some of the scenes, like when he was outside, were a bit longer or didn't interest me as well. But I think it's pretty personal and just like that. But it's like a minor doubts for me.
Mm. I actually enjoyed those scenes. I felt I needed those scenes because I said before it was shot in a very claustrophobic manner, and I think before he's about to leave on his off day, which is a system I don't really understand. Prisoners in France are able to go out of prison for an hour or a day and then come back. And the first one he has to pull a mission for César, because at that time he's already started learning Corsican and he's kind of a secret ally to César. But I felt the scenes before his release were getting very claustrophobic, and when he steps out, there's just this light. He looks outside and the sun is coming up, and you kind of exhale again and kind of, you need that scene. You need that time outside because you really cherish it at that moment.
Yeah, it was more like the second part of it, like when he was dealing with the and searching for the other guy, you know, from the Malians,
guy. I felt I kind of missed what Marty was mentioning. I kind of did kind of miss the identity of Malik. I understand who he was as a person. I would have enjoyed hearing a bit more about that than only the only part we saw was only the process of him becoming what he did. But we didn't really understand his motivations. I think that was lacking. I feel it was slightly long, 2 hours, 30 minutes. Although it's a very engrossing movie, I feel that it was slightly long, especially because there's long scenes of complete silence. But again, they add the movie. You need to invest in this movie to get any enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
I don't think you can watch it with popcorn and a lot of friends and laughing and shouting and having quite a beers.
All right, thanks, sir.
I one of the scenes I really liked also was at the completely final scene where they pretty much give him back his possessions that he had 6 years ago. And I think LF, you mentioned this earlier too. And he only has 50 euros when he comes into jail. And when he gets out, they give him that scrunched up 50 euros. And, that one scene just makes you realize the transition he's made as a person, where he came in and he had nothing. He didn't have any friends. He had no identity. He didn't know what he wanted, who he was. And he had 50 euros in his pocket. And coming out where he has pretty much a family, that's what he steps into. That's a family. Which kind of, he needed to get out of jail to kind of take that next step in his life.
No, I definitely think it's a film worth watching. Definitely worth watching.
That I have with the film, it is a well-made film. It's well put together. So on that basis, I would recommend it. But obviously, not like you say with, you know, you can't have five mates around having beer or whatever, because that's really just going to kill the buzz of that particular evening very quickly. But yeah, a good film nevertheless.
Yeah.
Cool. Like we said, it mentioned, it won the Grand Prix in Cannes. It also won the London Film Festival for Best Award, and it's also going to be France's entry for the Oscars this year. So, Un Prophet, I would definitely check it out. Guys, do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up? LF, maybe first?
No, not so much. No.
Okay, great.
Tell yours, I'm going to think about that.
Those were my final thoughts, actually. Marty, go. You have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I'd like to see more of the lead character. Not the lead character. I would like to see more of the actor who played the lead character. Thought he was good.
Yeah, the great. The actor's name is
Taha
Rahim. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Thought he was good. Be more than happy to see him in some other stuff. Very good.
Complete debutant, right? It was his debut movie. I don't think he has done anything before, right?
In TV series or something like that, okay. But not. TV. Yeah, he's never been in a movie, a complete movie, but he had like minimum of like small roles or and TV series.
Okay, great. Ahmed, any final thoughts?
I really, really think it's a different kind of film, and it's definitely worth checking out. Don't get worn out if you start watching it, because the first hour tends to drag a little bit, but after that, so much events happen that you really get into it. So, we know it's 2.5 hours, just fight through the first hour, and then I think it's a really, really good flick.
I think it's a very, you need to invest in the movie. It's not an enjoyable movie, but it's a very satisfying movie. I really enjoyed the process of how he kind of found his, he was looking for that identity. Taha Rahim has done a great job in the role as Malik. César, another guy, I think Niels Aristrup, he's a famous actor in France or not?
Mm. César is actually was in the previous Jacques Audiard movie. He was playing the father from Romain Duris.
Right.
But he's not famous.
Oh, he's not famous. Okay. So I really enjoyed César. Also his process about being the crying kingpin to being all sad and alone. You should definitely check out this movie whenever you have a chance. And I think it's out in most countries already now, and it's, I think it's going, my bet is it's a very heavy contender for winning a Best Foreign Film Award. That's my prediction. Who knows? I haven't seen the list.
May Hollywood hear you.
Great. So thanks for listening, guys. You can find us at upodcasting.com with new episodes every week. Next week we'll be discussing Lord of War, the Nicolas Cage movie, which was a pick by Ahmed, I think. You can follow us on Twitter, or you can always email us at feedback@upodcasting.com. And I leave you with Closer from DJ Iron, who you can always find at MySpace/DJ Iron. Thanks for listening.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
And I love you. Visit us again.